Hey, well, you're not allowed to cough outside. That wasn't a cough. That was a inhaling laugh. That's what I'm going to call it from now on. Anyway, it's Beth. It's I'm over 66 now, but I'm not going to go there. I'm just going to say over 65. It's no big deal. I don't think any of these are really going to be terrible for till about 75 or something. I don't know. So anyway, still the pandemic, still everything. It's June 25th, 2020, and it's episode 116. Kit is making these, he's putting some of our computer disks on the internet of like family, you know, family moments and, you know, things we've done. And he had one about my dad, and it was towards the end, and I just can't bear to look at it right now, but it got me to thinking about my father and that he was a twin. And there's a bunch of people having twins now, and he's the twin story that I know really well. Anyway, I found some twin facts. They do not share the same fingerprint, so that all that stuff about, you know, the perfect crime, that doesn't work. Massachusetts has the most twins. Mothers of twins usually live longer, and so do the twins, which is interesting. Twins, there are more lefties in twins, twice as many. They can have different fathers. We've all seen that, you know, different races, different everything. Okay, so this is what I thought was interesting. The mother's body temperature when she feeds each individual twin or holds each individual twin, her body temperature goes to the body temperature that makes each individual twin more comfortable. Now, that's amazing. She deserves to live longer for that one. So anyway, the first twins in the Bible were Jacob and Esau. And it says in the Bible that they fought even in the womb. They felt nothing but hostility towards each other. Mom and dad loved Jacob more than Esau, and mom and dad named Esau Esau, which is a terrible name for a person. Then the twin constellations, Gemini is the Latin word for twin, and it's the story of Castor and Pollux, and they were twins, and Castor died, and Pollux was immortal. Castor wasn't. I don't know how that happened. I guess with twins in mythology, some can be immortal and some cannot. I didn't even know that. So anyway, he goes up to Zeus and he says, Dad, listen, could you just make my brother immortal? Please just do me this one favor. You know, like Miss Castor, he's my friend. So Zeus decides to put them both in a constellation in the sky. And you can hear Pollux going, Dad, you're not listening. But, you know, it's too late. So that's all the twin stuff I have. But the real story about twins is my dad and his sister Marion. They were so incredibly close. In utero, they say in utero, twins start becoming friends at 14 weeks in utero. I know these two did that. The way they looked at each other, they could read each other's minds. And that's the truth. Drove my mother out of her mind. But the whole marriage, Aunt Marion and my father communicated with eyes and just holding each other's hands. My mother could be bleeding and my father would say, what's wrong, Joan? Is something wrong? Like, that would be hard. That would be hard. And so she thought that moving to Texas would get rid of this bond that my father had with another person. It just drove her crazy. She didn't want him to be happy. Like, actually, I asked her once, why don't you divorce Dad? I mean, we're all married. 3 out of 4 of us married Catholics. You got my brother's great educations and they're doctors and lawyers and you did your work. Now you don't need them. Just divorce them. Let me have them. Just, it'll be great. Everything will be fine. Keep the money. We'll just take them. And she looked at me and she goes, oh, Mary, that's the name that everybody calls me from New York. Like, it scares me. I like Beth better. Mary is like the Blessed Virgin Mother, and I can't live up to it. And anyway, my mother would say it to me like this, and every time she went, oh, Mary, I was going to hear something that I couldn't process. So this time she goes, Oh, Mary, what a wonderful idea. Divorce your father and let someone else make him happy? I don't think so. So you can kind of see where this is going. She didn't like that Aunt Marion and he were so close. So she really thought moving to Texas was going to be great for this reason. And one night, right after we got there, we're sitting at the dining room table and my father bolts out of his chair. The chair knocks over. He runs to the phone. My mother's like, Matthew! He looks back and he goes, I got to call Mary and she just fell. Oh my God. And he called her and she had just fallen. So Texas wasn't far enough. Nothing in the world could break this bond. Their story started in New York City. My grandparents had a fabulous apartment off Fifth Avenue, if you can believe it. High ceilings, mahogany, wooden floors. And because my mother was agoraphobic, my grandmother was agoraphobic, what made this so incredible to her, and the first time she'd ever had it in her whole life, it had a garden. So for an agoraphobic, she could get outside. Not just stick her head out a window, she could go outside, see birds. She was agoraphobic her whole life, in the city. So you can see how that's not going to work. She's completely happy here. So they had two children, a boy and a girl, and they were expecting their third child. Now that's when it was going to have to stop, because this place was so fancy that you were only allowed to have three children. So this was going to be their last child. So the doctor comes, and Aunt Marion is born, and she's absolutely beautiful. Doctor hands the baby to my grandmother, perfectly healthy baby girl. My grandmother has to get up to say goodbye because she's polite. And when she gets up, this scrawny, bird-like creature falls out of her body, lands on his head, and bounces to half the size of Aunt Marion, and a fourth child. Doctor wasn't sure the baby was going to make it. My grandmother would put both of the babies in the bassinet, and Aunt Marion somehow would crawl over to my father and keep him warm, because it was October and it was getting cold. So Aunt Marion kept this baby alive. But the bad news is they had to move. And they had to move very fast, because this guy wasn't going to have it. And he was going to raise the rent and was thrilled to get rid of him. At the very same moment, my grandfather, who had been like a superintendent at the post office, lost his high-paying job. So this moment, all of these things were happening. And they had to move into Germantown, which was a ghetto for Germans. And it was a 5-story walk-up. It was 2 bedrooms. They shared a bathroom with everyone on the floor. And you had to go downstairs to get water. This was a dump. So this baby, this twin baby boy, was... it was not a joyous occasion for anyone. So my grandfather got a job as a foot soldier, which is what they called the letterman who delivered the letters. I don't know what he did to lose the big job, but he got to be a letterman, much less pay, and the ghetto was all they could do. So my grandmother went into a pretty severe depression and left the twins completely alone, just all day long. So they developed an elaborate language together. They played together, they sang together, they told jokes to each other, just like those videos. And my grandmother never separated them, not for a second. That nobody took anybody out alone. It was just not a thing. If babies weren't crying, you left them alone. So my father never spoke, because Aunt Marion spoke for him. She'd say, Maddie wants a cookie. Maddie wants this. Maddie wants that. And my father said she was right about everything. It didn't even occur to him to talk. She was part of him, and she was the speaking part of him. So this went on to the third grade. And for a ghetto public school, I think this is pretty amazing. They had a big meeting about this problem child, Maddie. So they moved him to a different classroom away from his sister, Marion. Marion could handle it. My father developed a lisp, a stutter, and he had a nervous breakdown. He had to stay home with my grandmother for an entire year. This worked out to be a good thing because my grandmother wouldn't feed him unless he talked. And then she started sending him on errands because she was agoraphobic, and he got all the food and did all of her work that she had the older children do when they got home from school. Now, Maddie was her little servant, and she did everything for him. So it got him talking, and that was good. But he still needed Marion. He still wasn't happy until she was there. So there was still quite a big problem with that. And when she started liking boys, he got really nervous. So she practiced dancing with him. And they would dance all the time in the living room. And it got so good that they started winning contests, dancing contests. And she would win clothes, and they won some money. And it actually got to the point where they were going to have a screen test. And people said they danced like one, just like Fred Astaire and his sister Adele. That's how Fred Astaire got his start. And these two were sister and brother too, so it was going to happen. And my father backed out of it pretty much at the last minute because the war had started. And these are his words. He said if the army got a whiff that he was a little light in his loafers, they would never accept him into the war. And he wanted to be taken in. So that they lost their big chance. People did say they were that great. So, you know, that would have been interesting if, you know, they could have been like, you know, B or C level. You know, if you don't have enough money to see Fred and Adele and you can't get to Hollywood, you got this group, and they're not that good, but they're a little bit like Fred and Adele, Matt and Marion Merkel. Yeah, I could just see it. So anyway, my dad left, and when my dad left, my Aunt Marion got married. And when they still got together, I mean, they would just look in each other's eyes and look. My father would look at her hands. He would just look and caress her hands like they were his hands or something, like he was missing them and he got them back. They were so, the energy between them was so different that you just didn't even bother them. You didn't even tell them it was dinner time. You just let them look at each other. And they were speaking worlds to each other without words. It was really, really strange. And her husband didn't like it, and my mother didn't like it. They did not ever find the same intimacy in their marriages, not at all. Neither one of them had a good thing going. So that was not so good. And when I was a kid and I'd be home, I would answer the phone and I could tell she was crying. It was Aunt Marion. And she'd say, "Mary, is your mother home?" I'd say, "Yeah, my mother's home." She goes, "Oh no, listen, can you just go get your father? I just need to talk to him for a minute." And I'd have to sneak around like he was having an affair. And it was like one time I even took my mother outside because sometimes they would have a fight afterwards. Like, why do you have to talk to her? Why can't you talk to me? Don't you want to know that I'm upset? I have problems. You know, like it would go like that. So I was kind of an, you know, enabler in this thing they had. So anyway, they were both tremendous smokers too. They inhaled and exhaled the same exact way. The embers were firing up. They would inhale so deeply, and they would do it in unison. And they would put their cigarettes in the ashtray in unison. It was really wild, and they didn't even see it or know it. So he also liked things. They both liked head cheese, weird, weird foods. They loved sardine sandwiches. No one else in the world loved these things. Filbert nuts. I mean, they were mixed nuts, but nobody likes them. They raved about them. Halva candy from Turkey. They'd go crazy. So they were just like in their own little universe. Pomegranates. I mean, it was way before pomegranates were cool. He'd have to go to some crazy little fruit stand in Far Rockaway to get them. And he did, because she loved them, and he did too. And they picked the seeds. Oh my gosh, they were like two monkeys. But, you know, and I could see how it drove people crazy, but I thought they were cute. So it was the smoking that got both of them. And it got my Aunt Marion when she was in her 60s. My dad had her come down, and they went to MD Anderson, and they had a great plan for her, how to get her cured. And she wouldn't accept the plan. She wanted to have 4 good months instead of lose her hair and go through chemotherapy. It broke my father's heart. So he never got over it. Anyway, it makes me sad just thinking about it. But my dad lasted a lot longer. But he got pretty agoraphobic. He had a job, and then he worked at a golf course as a marshal, and he had a good time. And then my mother moved him into the city, and he just had an apartment. And he just watched television all the time, never left. He told me he was protecting his home, his homestead. It's like, okay. Well, anyway, that was okay. Everything was okay. Until one day I went to go visit him, and he was shaking like a leaf. And he was getting frail. I mean, I could see that. And so I was making more and more visits. But this time he was shaking like a leaf. I'm like, Dad, what's wrong? He goes, I'm so scared. I am so upset with myself. He said, I can't believe it. I'm a white knuckler. He said, I thought I was a better man than this. But I'm scared. I am scared to death. I said, well, what are you afraid of? I said, dying? And he goes, no, I'm afraid of the pearly gates. I'm afraid of St. Peter. I'm just scared to death. I was like, oh my God. He said, I'm not going to make it. There's no way. I know it. I'm doomed. Some things I've done, they're unforgivable. I just know I'm not going to get in. I don't want to go through it. I don't even want to try. I was like, I don't even know what made me say this. I said, listen, Dad, tell me what you did. Tell me some of them. Let me see if I think they're that bad. And, you know, my father knew me. And obviously I shouldn't be judging anyone, but he was desperate. So he said, okay. I drive 4 hours each way once a week to hear his sins. And some of them were really comical. Like a lot of them happened in bars, I guess, you know, and there were a lot of things that happened when he was in his 30s. So one in particular was, he was at this bar and this man and this woman start having a cat fight. And he is lunging at her. My dad gets up and he goes, say, friend, this is no way to treat a woman. I mean, he thought he was a Quaker. He always called everybody friend. Anyway, he says it really calmly, like, hey, friend, let's not do this. Anyway, he turns around and the woman clocks him. He goes down, but on his way down, he grabbed her glasses. So he goes, Mary, see, I hit a woman. I hit a woman. I'm like, are you sure that was a woman? It's like, yeah, I am. And I hit her. I'm like, no, you didn't. You lost your balance and you went down. Okay, that one was in the done column. And, you know, it was relaxing at first. The first couple of visits were like kind of adorable sins. And we got closer and we were having a great time. And then the fourth time he tells me about Joe. This was the love of his life. She was a Jewish girl from a very wealthy family. I'm like, how rich? He goes, Mary. First Christmas, she gives my mother diamond earrings. I'm like, diamond earrings? Real diamond earrings, real gold. Real diamond, real gold. I'm like, okay, she was rich. Okay, rich, we got it. Okay, rich. So then he says, we were so in love. I mean, I met the family. We were having a good time. Everything was great. I was going to get a good job. I was finished with school, working my way up the ladder to make it possible to have Joe. He finally felt like he was getting this promotion, and he made an appointment to see the father at his office. Park Avenue, fancy office, right? My dad walks in, feeling pretty good, brand new suit, walks right in, right up to the old man, gonna shake his hand. And before he can shake his hand, Joe's father slides money across the desk, this big desk, points to it, and he says, "Matt, it's $6,000. I want you to take it, and I want you to go away, and I want you to never see my daughter again." My dad's like, "But what? And he said, "Matt, listen, I'm warning you." That was all. My dad took the money and he went down to New Orleans to drown his sorrows. It was supposed to last 3 weeks. He stayed for 3 years. He spent every single penny drinking, gambling, and God knows what else. Every Christmas he'd call his mom and she'd cry, "Maddie, when are you coming home? When are you coming home?" He'd try to save the money. He'd get enough for a plane ticket. He'd gamble it away, drink it away. The only way he could get home was to become an airline steward. I'm kidding you not. And that's how he got home. On his third flight, he met my mother. And I was like, "Oh." And he goes, "No." He said, "What I did to Joe, I can't sleep at night. I can't believe I could have done that. I never wrote her. I never told her what happened. I left her like that." I said, "Dad, you know," and I'm thinking, what can I say? And then all of a sudden I remember I went to Catholic school. This is easy. I'm like, "Dad, okay. Did you remain miserable and upset about this your whole life long?" He's like, "Yeah, I did." I'm like, then that's what happened. It's purgatory on earth. And I said, "Listen, if you want me to find a private eye and find Joe, and we could take care of this right now, we could go fly to wherever she is. You could sit there and talk to her. If she's still alive, she'd probably love to know that you were sorry. And you'd probably love to know that she had a good life. And I bet she did." And he was like, "I can't. I can't even ask her to forgive me. It would be unfair of me. There's no way I deserve her forgiveness." I was like, "Okay." I said, "But it was purgatory on earth." It's like, all right. Maybe you're right. I was getting a little choppy with this. It wasn't working out as great as I hoped. So anyway, I go back again. And this time, he's shaking like a leaf again. And I'm like, "Oh boy, it's Joe." I said, "Dad, purgatory." He goes, "No. It's not Joe." He said, "I got to tell you this one other one." He said, "And I hesitated to tell you because this is bad." I'm like, "Okay." He said, "We were in a bar." And I'm like, "Oh, please tell me this is another fun sin." And he goes, "You know, and there I am and I can't stand it. I don't know what's wrong with me, but I can't stand it when a guy yells at a woman. And I got to get involved." So same thing happened this time. Guy's yelling at his girl and he's looking like he's going to hit her. It was a dive bar. It could have happened. So he said he went up to him and he did the old friend routine. "Hey, friend, you know, this is no way to handle it. And she looks like a lovely girl." And the guy looks at him and he said, "You know what? She is a lovely girl. But you know what? You and I are going outside because you had no right to come up to me. And we're going to have this out right now." So my dad follows him outside. And unbeknownst to my dad, two men follow my dad, this guy's two friends, right behind my father, who doesn't see them. So it's going to be a 3-to-1 fight outside. It's going to be a bloodbath. But they don't know that my Uncle Steve was with my father that day at the bar. He came back from the bathroom, and he saw them going outside, and he just decided to follow. So the man turns around, he goes, "Stick him up, we're going for it." My father looks up, he sees the guy he's supposed to fight, and he sees the two men behind him, and they're all laughing. My father thinks he's a dead man. And then he looks Again, and there is Uncle Steve, 6'5". And he just takes those two other men and clunks their heads together like coconuts, and they fall straight down. I'm like, Dad, that's fair. That was wrong of them to do it. He goes, no. He said it was the way one of the guys went down. It's the way his head went down. He said, I think he killed him. And we left right after that. But he said, I checked the papers and I checked the obituaries for months, for weeks, for whatever, looking for some story like that. We never went back to that bar, but I never saw anything. But he said, I know that guy died. I just felt it in my bones, the way he went down. I was like, Dad, he didn't die. It would have been in the paper. The police probably would have wanted to talk to you. Other people saw it. He goes, no, not a dive bar like this one. Nope. He said, I think I killed him. And he said, that's why. Now you know what I'm really scared of. It was murder. I was there. I was like, no, Dad. Well, it's not working. I mean, I am not making a dent in fixing this one. He is positive that man was dead. And he is positive it was his fault. So I had to leave. But I came back in 2 days. I was so worried about him. Called him the next day. And he didn't want to talk on the phone. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. We probably never should have done this. Now things are worse than they ever were. So I like fly back. Get there early. I walk in. And there he is. Lying on his bed, watching his TV. He looks peaceful and calm and well rested. He's not shaken like he'd been shaken for weeks. I was like, Dad, you look great. What happened? He goes, Mary, get over here. I come over. He's like, the most amazing thing happened. Aunt Marion, your Aunt Marion, my sister, came to me. Right here, I saw her. She was gorgeous, younger, beautiful. She looked at me. She grabbed my hands and she said, Matthew, stop worrying. Don't worry about anything. Don't worry about St. Peter. Don't worry about anything. I'm going to do all the talking for you. Well, that was that. He unclenched his knuckles for good, his fists for good. No more white knuckle all the way. He relaxed and he passed peacefully within that week. And that's what I think of twins. The power of twins. I think people are so lucky to be a twin. They live a different life than we do. They're really never alone. It makes me happy to think that they're up there together. And maybe they're dancing, maybe they're just having a wonderful time. And, you know, I wonder where Joe is. I really almost wish I got her last name so I could have found out that she had a good life. I would have liked to have known for my own sake. Maybe she's up there with them, I don't know. I hope she is. So, anyway, just wanted to tell you, if you have twins, that's wonderful. They're lucky, and you're lucky. And I almost wish that we were all twins. I think it would be much easier to go through this world with someone that you were getting to know in utero at 14 weeks. Someone that knows you more than you know yourself. What a blessing that would be. So, anyway, just wanted to say a little something about my dad. And let's all just remain calm. Stay. It's no more crazy than we are. And we're going to make it. We're one day closer to whenever this thing is going to be over. So I just wanted to tell you a story about my dad and twins, and I will be back. Thanks. Bye-bye.